Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
From the Moan Broadcast Center, this is Air Talk. Good morning. I'm Larry Mantle. We're with you an hour earlier again today. NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial gets underway in an hour. This hour, we start with a poignant statement released yesterday by Kobe Bryant's widow, Vanessa. She lost her husband and 13-year-old daughter, Gianna, in Sunday's helicopter crash in Calabasas. I'm asking Air Talk listeners who've suffered the unexpected death of a child or spouse to share what was most helpful in coping with devastating loss. We're at 866-893-5722, 866-893-KPCC. Also, the controversy over the novel American Dirt. Yesterday, its publisher canceled the author's publicity tour. It's Air Talk after the news.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at NortonSimon.org.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Good to have you with us. Hope your day's off to a good start. We're here again an hour earlier so we can bring you NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. I particularly appreciated yesterday's format where they're held to a five-minute answer to the questions from the senators, alternating parties. I thought it got to number the central issues in the trial in a way that was much more concentrated than in the opening arguments. So today we have another up to 8 hours of the Q&A, the senators asking questions of both sides on the trial. So that starts up 10 o'clock here on KPCC. I also want to ask Air Talk listeners who have suffered a devastating, unexpected loss. If you've lost a child in an accident, a sudden event, or a spouse that you lost suddenly and suffered this kind of just horrible, horrible loss, how helpful were people around you? What were the things they did or said that maybe helped you during the initial period of deep grief and undoubtedly shock? And what are the things it was helpful for people to avoid or you wish they didn't say or do? We'll take your calls a little bit later. This in the wake of Vanessa Bryant, Kobe Bryant's widow, with her deeply poignant Instagram post yesterday thanking people for their support of her and of their family, but also talking about the depth of the grief that she and their three surviving daughters are going through. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. That'll be our second segment this morning on Air Talk. We begin with a conflict that's familiar to so many Southern California communities. That is homeless Angelenos living in parks or other public spaces that are used by the general public. With so many people without housing and many of those people looking at places like the beach or public parks or libraries as places to set up encampments, the challenge then is how do you serve the residents of that community and also sensitively deal with the needs of those who don't have housing? This has come to the fore in many places, but one of the most recent is Echo Park, where the beautiful Lake Park there across the street from historic Angelus Temple has been the site of about 60 individuals who have been camping there on an ongoing basis. They have petitioned L.A. Councilmember Mitch O'Farrell to be able to stay there on an ongoing basis. The city has been holding sweeps of that area. Mitch O'Farrell has also been seeking additional funding to provide cleanup stations and bathroom facilities in the northwest area of the park where most of the individuals are camping in Echo Park. I'd like to hear from you if you're a resident of the Echo Park community. What do you think? Should Echo Park Lake, the area there, be a place where people can live on an ongoing basis who would otherwise not have a place to live? Or is it better to clear the park so that residents can then use it without having interactions with homeless Angelenos? 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Joining me is Darcy Harris, the chair of the Echo Park Neighborhood Council, which is in the thick of this whole debate over how best to deal with this in the community. Ms. Harris, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Larry.
You might have heard that in Whittier, they actually ended up, after removing homeless people living in the park, closing it overnight to keep people from camping in the park. That's one approach. Just personally, I know you can't speak for the council because you haven't voted on you know what plan to support. But for yourself personally, what do you think is the best approach?
Well, just to say, as the council, we are trying to hold a public forum and hear from all the stakeholders. We've heard from there's a variety of views, and we're trying to craft suggestions to the city for a balanced approach to all of our stakeholders, including the houseless residents who are stakeholders. What I think personally, one thing to look at is other public land, city-owned land that is nearby but might not be as controversial for use, and look at solutions for allowing our houseless residents to come up with rules for self-governance that are not as much of an imposition on this central park that so many people want to use for so many purposes.
Do you feel as though the Echo Park Neighborhood Council has a significant voice that is going to be listened to by the city and by others, or do you feel like you're kind of competing for the ability to be heard in this?
Well, I think over the last few years, we've definitely built up a good relationship with our city officials, and they do look to us because we are a forum for a lot of different voices. So we are cooperating with the city officials, and we are, for instance, we're hosting a forum February 27th on this exact issue at the St. Athanasius Church, and we have a commitment from the senior lead officer for this area to attend and try to come up with solutions for all our neighbors.
All right. We're talking with Darcy Harris. She's the chair of the Echo Park Neighborhood Council. Also with us from Street Watch LA, a coalition of Democratic Socialists of LA and the LA Community Action Network, community organizer Jed Parriott. Mr. Parriott, thank you for being with us. I know you're supporting the people that are living in the park and them being allowed to stay. If that happened, what would keep that from growing into a larger encampment?
You know, Larry, by the way, thank you for having me on. So right now we face an unprecedented crisis in this city, right? Housing and healthcare, the costs of those things are skyrocketing. And so folks have been pushed to the street and have nowhere to go. And when folks have nowhere to go, they're going to be occupying public spaces. And right now I think we need to be addressing the public health needs of folks who are houseless. And that means, number one, giving them access to public restrooms, public drinking fountains, trash cans, right? Public parks provide all those things, and they're all right there already, right? They exist right now.
Would you limit the number that could live in the park, or do you think as many people who come should be accommodated there?
You know, that's a question to be, you know, first of all, right now we're fighting just for the rights for some folks to be at the park at all right now, right? We haven't even gotten to that point where we can talk about limiting. I think that's a future discussion. Right now, the residents of Echo Park Lake, who, by the way, keep the park clean and are respectful to their neighbors, you know, right now they're simply trying to get Mitch O'Farrell and law enforcement to you know, come to an agreement where they say, you know, you guys can stay here as long as you, you know, are respectful But that agreement is right now sort of on a thin line, right? It's there's constant harassment from Rangers and LAPD. There's a lot of residents who I would call them haters, right? They complained about the homeless, but they're not talking to them. You know, you mentioned earlier balancing the needs and how people might not want to have interactions with unhoused people. I think the opposite should be happening. I think that the community should be coming together as one, housed and unhoused people, and having more of a dialogue, because that's a big problem we've seen in the city, is that folks who live inside say, you know, like, I don't want to go, oh, that's an encampment. I'm just going to call the police to deal with that. I'm not going to go and actually talk to the folks who are living there and get to know them. They hang on to the stereotypes that for too long have been really creating and perpetuating a mass problem in the city, which is the idea that we can police our way out of the problem. And that has proven to be a failure over decades.
Mr. Barriott, I understand that you're saying you want to defer the issue of how many people the park could accommodate and how do you balance the needs of families that want to use it or people that want to bicycle or walk through the park or whatever and those that would live there. But one of the problems, you know, that people argue is if you allow the 60 people that are there and you make it a more sanitary, nicer environment for them, realistically, that's only going to draw more people to what is a comparatively nicer spot to live than in an alley or some other deeply unpleasant place where so many people without housing have to live. So that's going to attract then more people to the park de facto. So then the question, if you don't deal with that issue, is how much of the park do you give over to an encampment? How do you even deal with the issue of the 60 that are there now? Aren't they linked, those issues?
No, I actually think right now the fight is over whether anybody has a right to be at that park right now. So like I said, we can't even get to that point, that discussion of how many can be here, because right now Mitch O'Farrell and law enforcement have not even said that they're willing to let anybody be there in any official capacity. And so that fight, you know, again, I have to defer that conversation to another time right now. You know, and I would pose to the city officials and the folks who are concerned, if the solution from the city is to kick everybody out of the park and say you can't be here anymore, where do they go? And the answer is probably they're going to go right to the sidewalks across the street. They're going to set up encampments all along the various streets around Echo Park Lake, where they would be legally allowed to sleep at night because they have nowhere else to go. They have protections from Jones and the Martin decisions that the Supreme Court recently upheld. And so what's better? Folks to be at the park or to be on the sidewalk surrounding the park, right closer to people's homes, closer to people's apartments, and further away from those public.
All right. Jed Barriott with us from Streetwatch LA. He's a community organizer with the Coalition organization. Again, I'd like to hear from you, particularly if you live in the Echo Park neighborhood. How would you, as Darcy Harris, chair of the Echo Park Neighborhood Council, put it, deal with the concerns on multiple sides of this and find some way of attempting to deal with the needs of homeless Echo Park area folks, as well as people who are renters and homeowners in the community? 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Also with us is Lloyd Edwards, who's living at Echo Park Lake at the park there. Mr. Edward, thank you very much for being with us. How long have you been living there?
I've been living there for approximately 2 months.
And what's been your interaction with the park employees or with police since you've been living there?
Well, I can tell you that there's been a stark difference between my interaction with law enforcement and with the community. And first of all, I just wanted to commend you guys for just having this discussion. I think it's a first step in the right direction. And I'm just speaking on behalf of, you know, as a homeless man myself. But we've had a lot of donations just given to us from a lot of members in the community. Sometimes food is given to us. There have been certain people who have come up to us and just had a discussion with us, and we have found that to be encouraging. Now, law enforcement, you know, we've had moments where a law enforcement officer would come and just talk to us one-on-one, but most of the time, it's really just been more of an aggressive approach. where it's not really been an interaction, but more of a sweep or just, you know, they would call it an educational moment where they would teach us, you know, the rules, but it's never really been a warm interaction with law enforcement. Go ahead.
Mr. Etter, I wanted to just ask you, what do you say to people who would argue, you know, I moved here to Echo Park because of the beautiful park. I want to be able to use it with my family and take advantage of all the amenities. And if homeless individuals are allowed to stay in the park overnight on an ongoing basis, the numbers are only going to grow. And eventually, I'm not going to have use of my park. What do you say to those folks?
What I say, and this is very heartfelt, is I completely understand where they're coming from. What I really just want to bring to light is to those folks, are we aware also that this has become a statewide problem? You know, we can focus on Echo Park Lake, but it's a bigger issue than that. We have homeless people in Skid Row. If you've ever been in the Skid Row,
let me just interrupt. Say, I think everybody who lives in Echo Park is well aware of the degree of magnitude, not just in that community, but we're dealing with a statewide crisis. So, no question about that. But at the same time, many of those folks, I'm sure, want to use their park and are concerned that the numbers will grow and that that's going to make it difficult to use the park.
And that's the reason why I bring up the statewide problem is because we're all trying to find a solution. Now, I can't speak on behalf of the higher ups, you know, the councilmen, the people, the politicians, but we just have to find a better solution. Personally, I've been homeless in Los Angeles for about 2 years. The only thing I worry about also is this sense of criminalization of homelessness, as if all homeless people are criminals, but it's not really that. It's just a lot of us are just a step away or a paycheck away from being in the same situation. So personally, here I am in Echo Park Lake. I've been living here for approximately 2 months, just waiting for housing. I've applied for housing and through a nonprofit organization by the name of the People's Concern. And so in the meantime, what do I do? Where do I go?
And it's understandable that you would rather live in the park than go to a homeless shelter, perhaps, or, you know, live in an alley. I understand the park is beautiful and as challenging as I'm sure it is on these winter nights to live in a tent in the park. That's got to be very challenging. I think all of our listeners are deeply sympathetic to your experience. At the same time, it makes sense that that's where you would choose to stay.
Right. And just to answer to that, when you mentioned shelters, it goes back to my point where we need to find more viable solutions, because even with shelters, which has been a personal experience of mine, some shelters you can stay a week at a time, and then the next week they kick you off the shelter program, or they leave you in the streets of the following week. Some shelters are not guaranteed to have a bed that night. There's not a consistency in the shelters. Some shelters are not even safe to be at. So that goes back to, as a state, are we finding what is the proper solution for a person like myself, for example, who doesn't drink, who doesn't do drugs, who is applied for housing, I've been waiting. And so in the meantime, it's become specific to Echo Park because this is where I've stayed in the last 2 months.
Yeah. I need to take a break, Mr. Edward, but I appreciate your being with us. That's Lloyd Edward, who for the past couple of months has been living at Echo Park Lake, at the beautiful park there in the Echo Park neighborhood of Los Angeles, just west and north of downtown Los Angeles. We'll continue with more calls. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Back in 1 minute.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. We're talking about Echo Park Lake, the gorgeous park in Los Angeles, a historic community there, beautiful homes on the hills, one that has undergone some significant population changes, working class community and gentrification that it's dealt with. And one of the issues Echo Park is now dealing with is about 60 men and women who are living in Echo Park Lake area adjacent to the lake, and that there have been some sweeps of those individuals. And the group that lives there wants to be able to stay there. They've written a letter to L.A. City Councilman Mitch O'Farrell, who we contacted, not able to join us today, asking that they be given some support with sanitation, that they be able to stay there since there aren't other prospects for them to have safe housing. My question for you is, what do you think about that? You know, in Whittier, they took a different approach with the park. They cleared the encampments that were there. They closed the park completely overnight so that no one can enter the park after dark. And they've taken the position that the park is not a place for people to camp out and to live on an ongoing basis. In Echo Park, that community is trying to deal with, you know, through their neighborhood council, we have the chair, Darcy Harris, with us, interests of those that are living in the park and deal with those that want to use the park for recreational purposes. Let's talk with Julianne in Echo Park. Good to have you with us. Julianne, as a resident of that area, what do you think?
Well, I was in the park yesterday, and there was an organization there that comes every week and clean out the park. I mean, that park's different because it has a lake there. And they're pulling out mattresses and scooters and, you know, all kinds of things out of the lake as a result of how the lake's used. And that is a problem.
Yeah, and we should say people have been dumping stuff in Echo Park Lake going back many, many years. So that's not new that there has been a dumping problem. I understand that maybe sheets and mattresses, that is related to the encampment. But so what's your answer, Julianne?
I don't think the park should be used as an encampment.
All right. Julianne in Echo Park, 866-893-KPECC, or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Kate in Echo Park, I understand you live next door to the lake. What do you think is the best solution?
Well, first of all, I don't know about other encampments as well as I know Echo Park. I walk around that lake twice a day with my dogs. The homeless people are respectful. They're polite. I've never been panhandled. I have never been bothered. I've come to know some of them a little bit. And we have a problem here that is not their fault. They have no place to go. They have belongings. The shelters are asking them to choose between their belongings and going there, even if they were adequate shelters and even if they were accessible. The one problem I do see at the lake is every so often there are individuals with significant mental health problems. There's one person there now. who has created a bit of an issue of the last week or so.
Okay, Kate, I'm sorry to interrupt because we're short on time. So I just want to, do you think there should be a limit on the number? Because obviously there are we're talking tens of thousands of homeless people. Many more could choose to come live at the Echo Park Lake site. Should there be a limit, or if that became in totality a series of encampments, would you be okay with that?
I think the representative of the homeless people is correct. This is a process that we must engage. You don't decide the end first. We look at the people, we find a way to meet needs. And it's a citywide and a neighborwide issue, but you can't erase these people. They are not a hazard. The greatest hazard is driving them so that they're adjacent to my house, where fires have been lit on sidewalks underneath palm trees. That's a problem.
All right. I appreciate it. Kate, thank you very much. She lives next to Echo Park Lake. Alice in Echo Park called to say, my condo overlooks the lake. I'm on the side of the homeless individuals living in the park to be able to stay. Matthew in Echo Park says, I live in Echo Park. I feel like they should be allowed to stay. Until there's real solutions, they should be able to live in the park. That's Matthew in Echo Park, 866-893-KPECC, or the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. Also with us is, Josue in Pacoima. Josue, what do you think?
Yeah, I have a comment and a slight question.
Yeah.
My first part is a comment. I think that the homeless should not be able to live there, and I know that sounds harsh, but it's a part of a symptom of a greater problem LA has, that they need to take a more proactive approach to provide more help, more shelters, more outreach programs to the homeless. Because I think it's just ridiculous that they are criminalized and they are treated very harshly by the community and are not helped at all by the mayor or city council. And my other question is that they're like, what kind of more proactive solutions can there be besides just bureaucratic red tape of, handing out maybe like a just small little like bones to them,
Well, the city, Josue, the city is trying to open up shelters for people to stay. But even when you have significantly more shelter beds, I would think, and I'd be interested to ask Lloyd Edward, who's living in Echo Park Lake, that there's still going to be individuals who would much prefer to camp in the lake than to be in a shelter. In a shelter, you're in what is often a noisy environment. You're surrounded by people. You don't get to choose necessarily, where you are. If you're camping in Echo Park Lake, you don't like the person in the tent next to you, you can move to another place. You have more autonomy. Lloyd Edward, would you choose a shelter if a shelter bed was available for you, or would you prefer to stay at the park?
I personally would, thank you for the question. I personally would choose to stay in a shelter. I just need people to understand that staying in a tent is not, what we would call a luxury option. Not much luxury when you're a homeless man or woman.
But a shelter isn't either.
The problem with the shelter is inconsistency. One day you may have a bed, then the next day you may not. There was a caller before that I was listening to that mentioned that, you have to choose between your belongings or, just staying there for the night and just leaving your belongings behind. So it's just, are there programs in place where someone can stay for a year, 2 years, or, is there more consistency when it comes to having shelters and beds?
We're talking with Lloyd Edward, who has for the past couple of months been living at Echo Park Lake. Christine writes on the Air Talk page, I live across the street from Echo Park. I walk and jog there. I have lots of picnics regularly. I find the people living in the tents to be very respectful and peaceful. They look like people trying to make the best of their situation, try to keep a happy life, keep their area clean, and only take up a portion of it, leaving lots of open space for the rest of us to enjoy just like they are. That's Christine writing on the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Let's talk with Mark in Echo Park. Mark, your perception of this, and should those living in the park be able to stay? Turn down your phone, please, Mark. Go right ahead.
Yeah. So my perspective is that they shouldn't be allowed to camp out overnight because they're using the park to the exclusion of other people. They're there all day, all night, and whether or not they're respectful is one thing. It's just that we're prevented from using that area that we pay for in our tax dollars. There are problems with drug use. There are messes with respect to human waste, and they are throwing stuff in the lake too. I'm sure there's a lot of good people there, but there's a lot of people that need serious help as well.
All right, Mark. Thank you very much, Mark in Echo Park. Mike in Silver Lake, Michael says, I'm with an organization, FELA, FELA Homeless Coalition. One of the issues is sanitation. This can be resolved if the city and other volunteer services provide sanitation services to those that are living in the park. Elizabeth in Koreatown says, saying to go elsewhere isn't fair. There aren't enough shelter beds. Suggesting people live in an alley isn't safe. It makes people subject to harassment and harm. It's not a place to live. That's Elizabeth in Koreatown. Dorit in West Adams District says she chairs a group that does engagement in Echo Park called SELA. She said it's a horrible situation, but there's simply no other place for people to go. Our organization engages with the people that live in Echo Park regularly. We think they should be allowed to stay until there's appropriate housing for them. And Daryl in Thai Town says, I think the homeless Angelinos at Echo Park Lake should be allowed to stay. There's no solution currently in place. They're displaced, so until we figure that out, I think they should be allowed to stay. You can share your comments on the Air Talk page, kpecc.org, and let us know what you think. Brandon tweets, how can leaving mentally ill, poor, mainly people of color in inhumane conditions be considered progressive? There's no sane argument for this. They need to be forced out and into some kind of program ASAP. This is horrific. Again, you can share your comments on the Air Talk page, kpecc.org, and keep this important conversation going as the Echo Park community attempts to find a good solution. About 60 individuals living at the park there at Echo Park Lake, and some residents who have concerns about those encampments. Darcy Harris is the chair of the Echo Park Neighborhood Council, which is taking this up with a public event late next month. The public invited to come to talk about potential solutions. From Streetwatch LA, community organizer Jed Perriott and Lloyd Edward, who's living at Echo Park Lake. He's been there for about the past 2 months. We are not going to have that conversation we had planned about how to talk with someone in the intense grief of sudden loss of a child or spouse due to the demand, so many people wanting to talk about the Echo Park Lake situation. We will continue with Air Talk, taking you up to 10 o'clock, NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump, back in 90 seconds.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Coming up, NPR's coverage of the Senate impeachment trial. I don't know about you, but I found yesterday's time-limited five-minute responses to the senators' questions to be much more clarifying, a lot more targeted than we had in the previous days of the trial. I was pretty much riveted as someone who finds the law that is being considered here, in its complexities, pretty interesting. We have about 8 hours of that taking place today. You'll hear it live right here on KPCC. Tomorrow, we don't know the schedule for the Senate impeachment trial. It's expected tomorrow that they're going to take up the question of whether any witnesses will be called as a part of the trial. We'll, of course, have that coverage for you, but we don't have any schedule, what the hours are. So we intend to be on with you tomorrow, but we simply don't know if we will. And if we are, we don't know when. And we don't know if film will air tomorrow. But if it does, you'll hear our critics' review of the Rhythm section, Gretel and Hansel, which is a horror fantasy, and The Assistant, starring Julia Garner and Matthew McFadden. Those are coming up on Film Week, if not tomorrow, then potentially Saturday. And if not Saturday, then it'll probably be on Sunday at noon. So we'll just see as these days of the trial unfold. I'm sure you've been hearing about the controversy over the novel American Dirt. Janine Cummins is the author of the book, chosen for Oprah's book club. It got a tremendous advance notice, strong words of support from actress Salma Hayek and others. The book details the story of an Acapulco resident who, after a massacre of her family at a quinceañera, flees Mexico with her son, and they, with a group of migrant travelers, attempt to cross the border into the United States, fleeing for their safety. And there's been criticism since the announcement this was going to be a part of Oprah's book club from people who've taken issue with the fact that Janine Cummins is not Latino writing the story. There's been criticism of the quality of her writing, of what some have said are stereotypes of language that's poorly translated. There have been a number of criticisms. Not unusual that a book's qualities would be criticized. That's why we have book reviews. But much more controversial is the question of whether she is someone who's not Latino, should be able to write a story like this. Now, here's what Janine Cummins said in an interview with Morning Edition host Rachel Martin. Martin starts with this question.
I do want to get into some of the details of the critique because it is so widespread, and I understand that you've tried not to engage in it, but we spoke with a writer from the LA Times, Esmeralda Bermudez, an immigrant herself, and she has said, and I'm quoting from a tweet thread, "American Dirt has left us with a textbook example of nearly everything we should avoid when writing about immigrants. It is hollow, harmful, an adrenaline-packed cartoon."
Okay. I don't know how to respond to this. Not everyone has to love my book. You know, I endeavored to be incredibly culturally sensitive. I did the work. I did 5 years of research. The whole intention in my heart when I wrote this book was to try to upend the traditional stereotypes that I saw being very prevalent in our national dialogue. And I felt like there was room. I feel like there is room in the national dialogue for us to examine the humanity of the people involved in a much more intimate way. And people can decide for themselves whether they feel that I failed or succeeded in that endeavor, but that was my hope.
Janine Cummings, the author of American Dirt, which yesterday the publishing company for the book said they are for the safety of Janine Cummings, as well as people at bookstores and other locations where she was scheduled to speak. Their entire book tour is being canceled. Now, author Sandra Cisneros, who's been a guest with us on Air Talk, she reaffirmed her support for the book. She spoke with Maria Hinojosa of the podcast, the NPR podcast and show Latino USA, said she thought it could educate a whole audience that otherwise wouldn't be exposed to issues at the border and what the lives of migrants are like. Joining us is culture writer for Vox. She's been following the story, Constance Grady. Constance, thank you very much for being with us. I'm trying to recall when we've had as much controversy about sort of a popular book like this, and I think we'd have to go back quite a ways.
Thank you for having me. Yes, I think this is probably the most high-profile case of this kind of controversy, especially in literary fiction. We sort of see controversies like this much more often in the YA world or in science fiction and fantasy. But the last time the literary world really had this conversation was 2016, and that wasn't really over a book. It was over a speech made by Lionel Shriver, the author of We Need to Talk About Kevin, who put on a sombrero at a keynote speech he was giving and argued that the idea of cultural appropriation was a myth, which spawned an enormous backlash against her.
All right. Well, I'd like to hear from listeners what you think about this. And again, not the issue of the quality of the book. If you read the book and you thought it was crummy, I mean, that's certainly understandable. People critique books all the time. But do you think that for someone who isn't Mexican-American or Mexican to write a story about the Mexican migrant experience to the U.S. is that excluding? Should the person not be able to write the story? I think of John Steinbeck, of course, writing The Grapes of Wrath. He was not an Okie or an Arkie who came out in one of the caravans seeking during the Depression a better way, better life in California. He was a writer who had the writing skills to tell that story. That story was not going to be told by a migrant coming from Arkansas, to California. Now, there were plenty of songs. Woody Guthrie, in his whole career, beautifully gave voice to the migrant American experience because music was one of the ways that that story was told. And there's certainly a lot of music that is written and performed in Mexico that relates to the migrant experience. But the question is, for a literary work of fiction, should that be the exclusive domain of someone who is either their family had that experience or they share the ethnicity of people who undertake that experience? We're at 866-893-KPECC. Don Winslow's one of the authors who blurbed American Dirt. He called it A Grapes of Wrath for Our Time. 866-893-5722. Let's talk with Graciela in Boyle Heights. It's good to have you with us.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me on. As someone who is an immigrant myself and as someone who has worked directly with unaccompanied minors, I think it's just wrong for someone to think it's okay to just conduct research for 5 years and think that'll do it. You know, someone that doesn't share the lived experience of what it is to migrate. It's completely in the wrong.
Do you think that realistically you're going to get someone who had that experience as a migrant who is going to write a novel about that experience and that's going to, you know, be a major selling book? Is that a fair expectation?
Oh, of course. Of course. It's totally a fair expectation. There's definitely people that are talented, that are willing to, to write their stories. Now, the thing is also it's being able to provide them with the resources and with the financial money to do so. Our voices have often been silenced, right? We hear our stories being told by people who don't know don't know them. So I think we can definitely expect for people who have lived experiences to being able to share those. And
oh, absolutely. They should be able to share it. I don't think anyone's going to argue against that. Do you feel like this pushes out a migrant who arrives in the United States from telling her or his story?
No, I think if anything, this encourages them. This is serving as an encouragement for them to say, you know what, that's not how my story is, and I'm going to take matters into my own hands and write, my own experience.
So this could potentially prompt that conversation. Now, do you feel similarly like Steinbeck should not have written The Grapes of Wrath because he just researched that? That wasn't his experience firsthand?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wrong. You're not sharing that experience. How are you going to just research and just write about it?
Well, journalists do that all the time. That is part of the job of journalists, is to do research, write about experiences they don't have, tell stories that they didn't have themselves. It's not first person. It's telling the third person story. So this is a novelistic endeavor. And again, aside from the qualities of the book, it may be a terrible book and terribly written. I haven't read it. I don't know. But the question is, can a person who is not part of that experience effectively? Is there the potential ability to tell that story effectively? In this case, Cummins might or might not have done that. But that's my question. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We'll be back in just 1 minute.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. We're talking about the novel American Dirt tells the story of an Acapulco woman and her 8-year-old son. They flee Mexico after her journalist husband writes a story about a drug leader in the area. A slaughter is carried out at Quinceañera, and so the mother and son take off toward the United States. And the book is a novelistic account of their experience. It's been heavily criticized. The writing of the book by Janine Cummins has been criticized. The language used, the protagonist, the woman at the center of it, there's been criticism that she doesn't exhibit the intelligence that someone in her circumstance would in dealing with the kind of crisis that she faces. So there are all kinds of criticism, which is fairly typical about any book that attempts to take on something, an intense experience like this. But it's extended beyond that to critique whether she, as someone who is Caucasian, should be writing that story, who didn't live it herself, should be writing a novel based on her research. Now, Monopoly writes on Twitter, the issue is not someone who isn't Latino is writing about Latinos. The issue is that Janine Cummins is getting the money and publicity that Latino authors are never offered. Well, certainly, there are Latino authors who are very high profile and make, I think, significant advances or under contract for their books. We're talking about Sandra Cisneros earlier. Can we say they're underrepresented? I think we can all agree on that. Absolutely. The question is, if someone who had undergone the migrant experience, or their parents didn't, they grew up listening to stories of this, and wrote a similar account, would that person not be published because he or she is Latino and someone who is non-Latino you know, gets the contract for that book is the discrimination in the public publishing industry at that level. 866-893-KPCC. Tony in Koreatown says, I think it's okay for people of different ethnicities to tell these stories, but it's certainly true. There's not enough representation for the Latino community. To me, these are two separate issues, though. That's Tony in Koreatown. Let's talk with Kyle in Simi Valley. Kyle, thank you for joining us. What's your opinion?
Oh, hi there. I agree that they're two separate issues. Now, but my about the Latino writers, my opinion is fiction writers are just that. They're making stories up. Writers are thieves and liars. They steal stories and make stuff up. You just had an ad for 1917. That was written by a man and a woman who were not soldiers during World War One. They know nothing about that personally, but they're creating that story. It's fiction. It's made up. And I don't think we should, I think we should judge it on the merits of the story rather than the ethnicity of the writer or anything like that. I did not read the book yet myself either, so I can't say whether it's good or not. That, to me, is a whole other issue.
All right, Kyle, I appreciate it very much. Let's talk with Gina in Culver City. You're on Air Talk.
Hi. I think that we have to be certainly sensitive to the concept of the white gaze and the appropriation of stories around people of color or films made about people of color that are not by those people of color. But I also think that it's a very slippery slope if we take away the opportunity for artists to create something that they're passionate about based on their ethnicity. And so I haven't read the book either, but I think it's important perhaps for this writer, if she can, to use her platform and the book as a tool to bring voice to the authenticity of the people who have experienced the issue. So it's an opportunity for us to come together as a community and have allies, and not for division and trying to separate us.
Gina, thank you very much. Good to have you with us. Let's see. We have Daniela in downtown L.A. says, in an interview before the book came out, the author said she didn't identify as Latina. It was only after the book she ID'd as Latina. I don't have an issue with people who didn't live the experience telling the stories. It's the switching in between that makes it uncomfortable. Constance Grady of Vox, Cummins has, was it a grandfather who was from Puerto Rico?
Grandmother. Has a grandmother from Puerto Rico.
Okay. So I know that was part of the controversy, right, was that there were people who felt that she pulled that familial background in an effort to build up her bona fides for the book?
Yes. So people were responding both to the question of whether she her identity around. She wrote in a New York Times essay in 2016 that she was white in every practical way. And then as the publication date for American Dirt approached, she began to talk more about her Puerto Rican grandmother. There is also the issue that she began to talk a great deal about how her husband was an undocumented immigrant without mentioning that he was Irish. And some people felt that she was sort of suggesting that he was Latino and was living this a similar experience to the people that she was writing about. I want to just quickly discuss the framing of this conversation a little bit, because I don't think it's accurate to say that the big question here is whether Jeanine Cummins has the right to write about this experience without having lived it. That's not what I'm seeing the biggest critics in this debate say. The question is instead twofold. It's one, has she written about these people's experience without exploiting them and writing trauma porn? And two, why has she received this level of institutional support when the writers of color who have actually have in similar stories and do exist have not received that support?
Yeah, and that's an excellent question, obviously. There's clearly something in this book, even if it's terribly written, that for some people at least seems to have galvanized, whether it's melodrama in it, the way the story is written, maybe even the stereotypes. And if so, that's certainly unfortunate. Thank you, Constance Grady of Vox. Appreciate your being with us. You can share your comments on the Air Talk page at kpcc.org. Also, Take Two is doing a roundtable to discuss this on one of their future programs.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.